Tax the rich. It's a slogan we've heard shouted on streets and trending online, but it's not a new idea. Ireland tried a wealth tax before and promptly dropped it. But times have changed, so the question returns, could a wealth tax work this time? And would it actually change anything? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Eamon Torsney. While the world's wealthiest gathered in Davos last week to talk about the future of the global economy, Oxfam released a stark counterpoint. Its new report argues that extreme wealth is no longer just about personal success. It's become a form of political power, shaping policy, weakening democracies and deepening inequality. In Ireland, the figures are striking. 11 billionaires now hold more wealth than 85% of the adult population combined. That's brought an old idea, a wealth tax, back into the spotlight. Not as a slogan, but as a serious policy option. The benefits should be clear, but critics say it's politically toxic, hard to collect and easy to avoid. So is this a symbolic fight or a very real, practical one? We're joined by Jim Clarkin, CEO of Oxfam Ireland, and Dr. Emmett Oliver from Trinity Business School. You're both very welcome to News Talk Daily. I'll start with you, Jim. Thank you for joining me. Your report argues that extreme wealth now actively shapes politics and democracy. When does inequality stop being economic and start becoming dangerous?
Thanks, Eamon, and thanks for covering this. I suppose annually, Oxfam globally produces a report in line with the World Economic Forum at Davos, just to spotlight the direction of travel of global inequality. And what we've seen in the last, it's about a decade since we started doing this, that it's accelerated at an exponential rate, you know, a rate that we couldn't have possibly imagined. And you mentioned some of the stats, but one that kind of really jumps out to me is the 12 richest billionaires own more wealth than half of humanity, more than 4 billion people. This is extremes that we've never experienced in history, you know, even going back to the Gilded Ages and so on. And that is continuing to accelerate. And from an Oxfam perspective, I mean, it does a number of things. First of all, it hoards this amount of money with a very, very small number of people. We have seen a reduction in the rate of poverty reduction. So in the 90s and into the 2000s, we were slowly reducing global extreme poverty, getting there slowly, not nowhere near fast enough, but it was moving in the right direction. That is now reversing. And even we see in middle income and more wealthier parts of the world, including Ireland, we see where there's a stagnation in wages and salaries, and we see cost of living increases, and we see the middle kind of just getting by, and things aren't improving for them. So we have a situation then where these wealthy elite, and you just have to look across the Atlantic to see a billionaire president with a billionaire cabinet, heavily influenced by billionaire, you know, in terms of winning the election and then in terms of what happened afterwards. And they're intentionally setting policy that, you know, works for them. Mm-hmm. And not for the wide population. And this is very dangerous because, you know, it's in their economic interests, it's in their political interests, it's in what will suit them and their companies and their families into the future. But that means that it's not going to work for the rest of society.
And where does the danger lie there?
Well, the danger lies in a number of ways. First of all, from an economic perspective, we're not going to see, you know, the rest of the population progress. We're seeing people getting poorer, even middle-income places and middle-income people getting poorer. We're seeing, you know, deregulation, and we're seeing greater influence of protecting that power and wealth for themselves. We're seeing, you know, at the extreme ends, we're seeing the populations getting frustrated by the centre because it's not serving them. And as a result, they start to look to alternatives and power that, including himself, you know, voting for somebody like that, which sadly will ultimately go against their interests because Trump and that government are not going to serve the people of America or the poor and middle-income people of America. They're going to make them poorer. And what it does is it erodes democracy, it erodes trust in democracy. And we're seeing this across the globe. we're seeing that the level of power, political capture, influence by these people is astronomical. We've seen even with Musk, you know, the kind of policy positions that he's been pushing, the attempt to interfere in elections in other parts of the world, in damaging other democracies. We've even seen when he took over USAID, destroying an organization that supported millions of the poorest people in the world because he had some whim and some ideas about how this should be done. And that's just one example from our kind of work, but just more generally, we've seen that, you know, people in America are getting poorer. Now they're getting more frightened. We only have to see what's happening in Minnesota. You know, ordinary Americans now fearful for their life, fearful to protest, to do the very basic things that a democracy is supposed to do and allow them to do fairly and freely. So this is a direction of travel that's hugely dangerous for society. It's not just about looking at those really wealthy people and envy or anything like that. It's about the damage that they can do to society. And also the fact that a lot of their wealth doesn't economically promote the rest of society. It just works for them. So it's not the best use of resource for it to be hoarded by a small group of people.
And in terms of bringing back to Ireland, in terms of how much would the wealth tax raise here? I mean, the estimate has been quite modest, about 2.5 billion a year. Where in your view would that money make the biggest difference?
Well, what the Commission on the Status of the Taxation Convention here in Ireland had suggested, this isn't Oxfam saying it, had suggested that we move away from taxes purely on income and consumption, which is where so much of the tax is currently generated in Ireland, and start to move towards capital and wealth, because it broadens the tax base. It's more reliable over time. We now know ourselves that we're heavily dependent on corporation tax, which is volatile depending on the whims of different companies or individuals. And so we need to continue to look at broadening that. And so the report that has been produced independent of Oxfam, but, you know, commissioned by ourselves, has shown that a very modest tax, so we're talking about just 1% mm-hmm. on people who have net wealth above 3 million. So that's net wealth. Once they've paid off all their debts and mortgages and all the rest of it, they still have 3 million euros. In anybody's eyes, that's a wealthy person. And we think it's not unreasonable that they would pay just a small percentage, which would then, you know, could be used for housing, could be used for health, education, childcare, you'd use for our climate commitments, our international development commitments. There's endless places where it could be used and could help to strengthen our ability to generate tax when at volatile times. And also, I suppose, importantly, it's not healthy for society for some people to feel they're being left behind or they're being just, you know, they're stagnating when they see across the bridge or across the river or wherever it is that they see these, you know, very, very wealthy people doing extremely well. And it's not about targeting them per se, but it's about a sense of fairness. It's a sense of everybody being in this together. So, hey, I'm a bit wealthier, so I can pay a bit more than other people.
And Ireland, it's a small, open economy. How realistic is it to introduce a wealth tax without triggering or avoidance or capital flight?
Well, this is why the design in the report, or the suggested design in the report, is to keep it simple, to avoid any exemptions or to have the minimal amount of exemptions. When this was introduced in the past, there were dozens of exemptions which punched holes in this. So keep it simple, keep it easy to administer. And with technology and with understanding assets better than we've ever done before, that is possible. And keeping it at a low level. So we're not trying to destroy wealth or trying to take the wealth away from wealthy people. We're trying to get them to contribute a little bit more to society in general. And again, to avoid the capital flight, you know, if people are only paying a small amount of additional tax, a decision for them to suddenly move or up sticks or move all of their things is a massive decision. People live in Ireland not just because of favourable tax. They live here because the quality of life is great, because everybody in society has contributed to taxation, which provides health, education, safety, security, a good place to live generally.
Can we do it on our own, or should we be looking for a European response to this?
Well, what we're suggesting is that we can do both. So a modest tax, which, as I say, has been suggested by others, not just Oxfam, and it isn't just coming from our space, is possible and manageable. It's been done in Spain, it's been done in Sweden, it's been done elsewhere. But we also believe that there is a bigger the bigger global issue here, and it's not just us saying it. It is the UN who have been working on this over the last few years. There's a real appetite for that. The G20 met in South Africa in November. There's a huge appetite there to create a kind of a global body that would look to roll this out, because there's an identification by global leaders. It's been mentioned at the World Economic Forum. It's been mentioned by the World Bank. It's been mentioned by the IMF and many others that this extreme level of wealth, you know, held by a very small group of people is not good for society. So we need to find ways to make them contribute more and make that more transparent, etc. Yeah.
And what about, you know, the fear that, say, ordinary people might find themselves with a property? We see property prices, you know, rising rapidly still. And you could be in a modest home and suddenly you're in a millionaire's home without realising it, but your income isn't really changing. I mean, how do we ensure that we don't end up, you know, with a wealth tax that captures more people than we intended?
Well, that's why we pitch it quite high. So, I mean, excuse me, the suggestion here, and this is just a proposal, I mean, obviously open for debate and open for discussion. It has to be sufficient that it's worth doing. So that's where this 3 million. But if you have net assets, when your mortgage is fully paid, your home, you know, whatever it is you have, you know, once that is paid, you're quite wealthy, you know, let's be honest. So, you know, and the fact that assets tend to appreciate at a much faster rate than a very small minimal 1 or 2% rate means that you'll always be ahead of the curve in any event. So it's just to introduce something, to test it, to see how it'll work. We feel that the time is right. There's an appetite from it. We're seeing it been mentioned across the political spectrum now in Ireland and elsewhere. There's an identification that we do have a global problem here. And that we also have a concern about where's the revenue going to come from? Where's the taxation going to come from to pay for the services that we all need?
Politically, is it realistic to see this in the next few years, for example, a wealth tax being introduced?
Well, why not, I suppose. And again, you know, it's why we need to debate it and discuss it, and we need to remove some of the concerns and fears about capital flight, as you said, and about it just hammering people for the sake of it. That's not what's intended here. So, you know, we need to have a debate about it, and we need to include wealthy people in the debate and see what how they feel about it too. But it'll require some political leadership, no doubt about it. But certainly the sense that we're getting is there's a real interest in this. As I say, from the Commission on Taxation and Welfare have demonstrated that they feel it's something that should be thought about. There are a number of political parties that are already talking about it. It feels like an idea whose time has come.
Okay. Dr. Emmett Oliver joins me as well. Emmett, Ireland's already tried a wealth tax in the 1970s. Why did it fail so badly?
Yes, absolutely. This has been tried before, and there's lots of reasons to try it again, as outlined by Jim. But we have to pay some kind of due heed to the historical lessons here, which are it was brought in exactly as Jim says for by Richie Ryan, who was a minister at the time in a coalition government in 1975. And it was brought in at 1% of a net wealth, with something similar to what Jim is suggesting. It brought in the sum total of about £6.7 million, which I know we've obviously have to inflate that figure for today's equivalent, but really a pitiful yield, unfortunately. And as Jim has explained, there were exemptions and was very administratively burdensome as well. So the problem with a wealth tax, and I mean, I've no personal skin in the game, not being wealthy, it probably would very unlikely to affect me in any way whatsoever. But there is, as I said, those historical parallels where it is administratively cumbersome. The yield doesn't tend to be wonderful. And, you know, it does tie up a lot of people in the revenue services and so on, chasing up valuations of assets and shares and art and property and making sure that people have made the right declarations and all the rest of it. And at the end of it all, after having done all of that, it's not likely to produce a huge addition to the public finances. There are good equity reasons, as Jim has well explained, to do it. But if people are sitting there listening to us and saying, well, this could build us a few new hospitals, build us a new metro, etc., it's not likely to do that. It's not going to come close to that for some of the reasons that, Eamon, you've outlined yourself. So, for example, capital gains tax, which is kind of the nearest thing we have to a wealth tax at the moment in the sense that it taxes shares when they're sold and so on, brings in about $2 billion a year. So let's say you double that or move it up by another third or something, you're still in quite a small area of the public finances. It's not going to make a sort of move, a massive fiscal move the dial moment for anyone, unfortunately. So yes, I agree with Jim. There are good reasons to reduce inequality and the gap between those at the top and those who are on the factory floor, as it were, as used to call it, at least. I just don't think a wealth tax is the device to do that. I think you'd be better off tackling when wealth is distributed in the first place within companies, things like executive remuneration and how the spoils are divvied up when companies pay out and so on. I think it'd be better doing that than coming at the end of the system and trying to relieve people who are already wealthy of their money, because as you've said already, capital flight is a very big danger here. We can model out how much capital flight there would be if you had a wealth tax in Ireland, but until you make first contact with the enemy, you don't really know. So there's going to be a certain yield, but is that yield going to be very big as a proportion of what you lose on the other side? So in other words, if you know, 10 billion is moved out of the country and you get in a yield of 1 billion, that's not great economics. So you have to be just, I suppose, aware of the challenges in this area. And I do think you're better off approaching it from a international basis where you get international coordination, whether it's an EU measure, dare I say, even the United States, which is unlikely. But I just think Ireland going out on its own with the economic structure that we have here and the model we have here would be a big ask. And I just don't personally think it would necessarily be that successful in yield terms, Eamon.
Okay, and Jim, you want to come in here?
Yeah, just to say, we're talking, you know, anything between 1% and 3% to deliver $2.5 billion. It's not massive, but it's not to be sneezed at either. And when we, as I say, we have precarious situation in relation to corporation tax and other taxes, it could help to fill some holes. But just specifically on the capital flight, I should have mentioned that in the report and the proposal, there is talks of an exit tax. So an exit tax that would be multiple times what the actual tax that's you're likely to be suffered, if you like, or like to be shared with those who are extremely wealthy. So, and this has worked elsewhere. We've seen in Sweden the capital flight that was, again, the fear that people had put out there, understandably, before it was introduced, just didn't materialise. The number of wealthy people that moved their jurisdiction following the introduction of the wealth tax in Sweden was tiny and was substantially outweighed by the tax gain. So, of course, it needs to be carefully designed. We've said that, and that's what the report is very clear on that. Yes, indeed, we want to have international cooperation, and that should happen in parallel. But this, we believe, is something that could be introduced. Keep it simple, keep it straightforward, keep it at a relatively low level, and then review as you go along, and then in parallel, make sure to be cooperating with the international bodies that are looking at this on a global level.
Emma, the way the wealth tax sounds, is it more trouble than it's worth if in terms of administration and the actual yield you get from it? Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah, I am saying that. I mean, you have to measure the two. So what do you get in and what is it costing you to administer the scheme? And is there better forms of taxation where that sort of formula comes out better in the wash? And I suppose history, I can certainly point to instances where these taxes have not performed as promised. So take France, for example. They've got a live one at the moment. Every single forecast they've made for the last 2 years for what they'd get has undershoot. There's a lot of modelling and people say this will bring in this, and if this happens, this will bring in this. History shows that there is certainly going to be a level of capital flight. It will differ from country and it'll differ from era. I think the problem, Eamon, is particular to Ireland. It's a bad case to make a case for wealth tax, if that makes sense, in the sense that a lot of the wealth gathered in Ireland is internationally based. So in other words, it's capital that has come into Ireland. Either people have come to live here, or they have an Irish passport, or they've set up a company here, or they're a manager of a US multinational based here in Ireland. Okay, now they don't have to be here, they can go elsewhere, and they are a bit more footloose than people that might be in other countries, including Sweden, that Jim has mentioned. So I think the particular structure we have here, and if you go to the list of billionaires that we have, you know, you see the two gents from Stripe, you see a lot of people that aren't born in Ireland but have come here and registered and domiciled here in recent times. You've got people like Dermot Desmond, Dennis O'Brien. A lot of them are already tax resident either in Switzerland, Malta or Portugal. So it's not that it's going to suddenly trigger capital flight. Capital flight has already happened in the sense that a lot of wealthy Irish people are already not living here for tax purposes have already shifted their assets out of Ireland. So in other words, you'd be putting tax, a wealth tax, upon quite fragile foundations. Now, I would love it if all of these people wanted to stay here and pay tax and make a contribution. I'm all in favour of that. But I'm just trying to work out and calculate and estimate, is that likely to happen if the wealth of a wealth tax regime comes in and, you know, is as Jim has said, is laid out and modelled out the way that Oxfam and others have done it. So I just think we should be very careful that, you know, the particular example of Ireland, if that's the exemplar that's being used, it's not really an absolute surefire tax winner fiscally that this is going to bring in a lot of yield while not driving certain people out that do have their fingers in those multinational companies that we have constructed our national economic model around. Now, there's a debate to be had about that, mm-hmm. but that's kind of a wider debate than just a wealth tax.
Can that issue be addressed, Jim?
Yeah, well, just to say we're, you know, I'll separate the two reports, if I may, because the Davos report looks at global super billionaires and their extreme influence on the world and all the rest of it, as described. The wealth tax we're talking about here is for, you know, relatively modest but still wealthy people. So we're talking about three. I'm not talking about the billionaires and that capital flight issue that you described, which is another matter and needs to be considered very seriously, of course. But we're talking about people with net wealth above 3 million. We estimated in a previous report that when we were looking at other numbers above the 5 million mark, that there are something like over 40,000 people that could be eligible for this. So we're not talking about a small group of people. In terms of administration, we believe that with technology and with ways to assess wealth and so on advancing quite dramatically, that it mightn't be as burdensome as it might seem at first. And again, the simplicity is key. So to keep it simple, it's net wealth, it's a small amount, there's an exit tax, and we try it and see how it goes, rather than being fearful of it because it hasn't been done properly before. We are at a stage where wealth has increased at a level not seen before for you know, a sizable number of people. And we just believe that it's fair and right that we should be looking at ways to bring them closer to the rest in terms of what they can contribute, without it having any damaging effect on themselves, really, when you talk about those very, very small levels.
And Dermot, one other question. Just if we really want to raise more revenue, why not just raise income tax on the highest earners instead? It might not be as sexy, but it should work, only alienate a few voters. Could that be an answer to this?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's this slight obsession with a wealth tax, even the phrase used, it sounds kind of satisfying, you know, let's go after the wealthy, you know, and I can understand the appeal of it emotionally. But I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, we can just alter the income tax bands. We can obviously do more on the property side. We can do more on capital gains. So we can do all of those things. We can also pull back some incentives. So, for example, a large number of people who come to Ireland, well, it's not that large, but a group of people come to Ireland under what we know as the SARP regime, which is people who are coming in from abroad to work here for a few years. They might be managing a large company and they get income tax relief. So we could look at that, for example. So in other words, rather than going down the wealth tax road, we could actually look at pulling back some of the existing reliefs and liberalizations for wealthy people that are kind of more easily done from an administrative burden point of view. And equally, as you've just said, we could just raise the top band, reduce the generosity of the credits and bring in money that way. Income tax is a massive payer. Capital gains tax is a bit of a footnote, you know. So I suppose it's rather than sort of inventing a wheel, we just kind of build onto what we have existing in the tax structure and tweak it in the budget. But I do think, just to come back to one point Jim was making, I don't know whether he deals with this point in the report, but the whole idea that states are in a competitive relationship has to be considered here. So in other words, if Ireland was to proactively bring in a wealth tax, and I know some countries like France at the moment are trying to do it, but I think Ireland to go out uniquely, particularly when it's, you know, other countries that it's competing with, whether we think that's a good thing or not, but it is competing with, has that sort of wedge or gap. Or people might simply say, well, that's a foolish thing to do. It's much better done all at the same time across the European Union 27 states. I think for Ireland to be sort of unilaterally going out and putting up a wealth tax and saying things like, well, hopefully it works out, or we give it a try or whatever, I think any Minister for Finance would be absolutely reckless in the extreme to take that measure without knowing that other states who also have treasuries looking for money and who aren't doing this, I think that would be, I would think it'd be extraordinary actually to stand up on Budget Day, bring in a wealth tax and say to the public, we're going to give this a try. Hopefully there won't be massive capital flight. Like, I just can't see that. I just can't see any minister writing that speech, in my opinion. I don't know whether Jim agrees with that framing of it, but that would be my honest belief.
Do you think it'd be reckless, Jim?
Well, we don't, because, I mean, look, Ireland competes at corporation tax level. It competes in lots of other ways. It also competes in terms of education. It competes in terms of quality of life, safety, all those really fundamental things that people rely on, which are paid for by taxpayers. Let's be honest, they're paid for by normal people, taxpayers in the main. Yeah, sure. I mean, we can look at increasing income tax. We do have a progressive income tax system right now. But the point is that there are individual, and we're not talking about necessarily wealthy paid executives. And I hear the discussion about that. And sure, of course, that can be looked at. But we're talking about the accumulation of wealth by a relatively small number of people that is growing much faster than income is growing. And we just believe it's a space that's not been looked at. It is a space that could offer something to the exchequer. We don't believe in some of the fear that's going around about flight. We, as I say, we've covered it in terms of exit tax, but we don't believe that it's going to be the case. Of course, we should be working on these things in parallel with our European partners and working through the UN convention that's being established. But we think that it's other countries have already done it, and it seems to be working. There are countries in Latin America, as I mentioned, Spain and Sweden and others in France you've talked about. So it's not something that, you know, we have to be as fearful. Of course, it needs to be thought through very carefully. As we said at the start, it needs to be simple, it needs to be fair, it needs to be at a low level, it needs to be manageable, it needs to be worthwhile, you know. But we believe, if you look at the report, it's written by Dr. Tom O'Connell, Ciarán Nugent and Sorley McCoy, so all independent, you know, experts in terms of the economics of this. It's worth seriously considering, and that's why we've put it on the table.
Okay, thank you. No doubt the debate over the wealth tax will continue in the months and years to come. And that's it from News Talk Daily today. Thank you very much, Emmett Oliver and Jim Clarkin. You'll find us, as always, on the Go Loud Player, where you can even catch up on all our episodes. Until tomorrow, I've been Eamon Torsney. Goodbye.